every time you are near. Just like me, they long to be close to you. Why do stars?
Hello, welcome to the newest episode of Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rapp, and with me is
Dan Mecca.
And today we're going to be reviewing Pierre Morel's From Paris with Love. But before that, we have a couple bits of new film news to talk about. And the first is today, Nikki Fink and Mike Fleming, who have been
the power team
for Scoops and everything Hollywood. They announced that Christopher Nolan will be overseeing
a consultant
on the new Superman reboot, which has been in WB for a while after Bryan Singer's attempt in 2006, which, I mean, it was moderately successful, but it didn't really...
Financially, it wasn't too successful. I mean, apparently it cost... I mean, if you look on Box Office Mojo, it says it cost $270 million. Other people say $200. Other people say $300. But...
And it only got a $52 million opening weekend, which is...
Right. I mean, I just think people, I think the big reason people always gave for it was that it was a little too old school. You know, it was a lot like the Richard Donner films from the early 80s and kind of didn't have that same hard-edged vengeance kind of... thing going for it that the Batman, Chris Nolan's Batman did. So I guess it kind of makes sense that the guy who successfully rebooted the franchise would try to reboot the other franchise that was unsuccessfully.
Yeah, rebooted. And we know that Nolan has a really good relationship with Warner Brothers. I mean, they talk in the new story how he didn't have to give them Inception.
Yeah, but I guess Warner Brothers didn't have first look with Christopher Nolan, but he gave it to him for Inception. And,
which comes out. Actually, related to that new story, Inception.
I mean, but who other than Warner Brothers would make Inception? You know what I mean? It's like Warner Brothers is the only ballsy studio out right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially for that.
I mean, that and then like Fox on a good day occasionally with movies like Avatar. But really, I mean, it's Warner Brothers. So. Yeah.
And in the news story, they don't deny that Bryan Singer and Brandon Routh are out, but I feel
Ralph. Sorry, just keep going.
if they're out, but I feel like if they want to kind of do the reboot, that because it's going to be, they said in the news story, it's going to be a complete reboot. They're going to retell the origin story,
right?
They wouldn't want to bring the same people back, you know.
No, even though I have to say I did actually really like Brandon Routh as Superman. I know he got a lot of hate, but I think that was more the screenplay's fault than his fault. But yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense, you know, to kind of reboot entirely and have a new, maybe Logan Lerman will play Superman and also Spider-Man, or maybe he'll just lie about everything and not play anybody.
With every new reboot news that comes out every day, it just kind of numbs
down. Yeah, the reboot thing is just becoming, I don't even know.
I mean, if I heard about this before, like, Spider-Man, I would have been like, whoa, but now it's just like...
And also, I mean, what does a consultant mean? I mean, so he's working on Batman 3, okay, that's great to hear. And then, he's a consultant, so does that mean he's going to oversee the, you know, the screenplay?
Is he going to be credited as, like, a producer?
Yeah, what does that even mean? I mean, I've always kind of been a little, you know... I mean, there are a lot of titles that float around in Hollywood, you know, and you never know how much, you know, an executive producer has to do with the movie, how much, you know, and someone like a consultant has to do with the film. So, I mean, it'll be curious to see what goes on.
It was kind of funny. It's in the story, they also give kind of a brief history of the project. And they said in 1997, Tim Burton wanted to do a version with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading about that. Yeah, yeah.
And then they said in 2004, J.J. Abrams actually wrote a script that was going to be part of a trilogy. But since he hadn't directed Mission Impossible 3 yet, like they didn't want to give this guy that only has done TV.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of... I feel like J.J. Abrams would have kind of brought a cool...
Yeah, I mean, J.J. Abrams knows how to make a movie. Yeah. You know, I mean, a big budget movie he's shown twice, you know, right? Mission Impossible 3 and Star Trek. So, I mean, that would have been cool. I also think that in some ways... Actually, it's funny. I just finished reading this graphic novel called Kingdom Come, which is kind of like this apocalyptic... story about all the superheroes, you know, like it's essentially like the world becomes so overpopulated with superheroes, it's almost like a war of the gods, and Superman is like in this, he disappears, then he returns to try to save the world, but ends up like resulting in all this crazy shit, and like he's the main character. Anyway, and that definitely, even though I didn't really like the graphic novel, that definitely made for a much more interesting Superman character that would probably better fit our times when you have movies like Watchmen coming out and 2012 where this very apocalyptic feel, you know, a darker kind of more jaded Superman is probably what's going to be needed. But I guess if you're telling, that's the thing though, if you're telling the origin story, then what, like, where's the place for that dark material?
Like we said with Spider-Man, like, Superman's not inherently, like, kind of a dark character.
Right. Yeah, like Spider-Man, yeah. Like, why would you reboot it as opposed to, I mean, like, why not just recast it and kind of keep going? I don't really understand.
Because I do like the feel of Bryan Singer's film. I just didn't, you know, like the...
Yeah, no, I mean, I like it more than you do, but I mean...
But they don't mention if Nolan's going to inject his, like, dark, right. You know, the gritty style he's known for.
I mean, but. I think, like... And there's a scene, in Superman Returns, Singer's movie, that is the most powerful in terms of where the Superman character could go. Is there's a scene where he's hovering above the Earth and he's just listening to the problems of the world, and he's literally like a god, just like overseeing his world. You know, it's not his world, but like essentially this is what it's like.
What
is
he has to
protect. And just the chaos of it is really you hear it in his mind and in his, you know, in his head, and it's fascinating. If you made a movie about him, like literally like his life was doing this, and he just maybe became too much or something, that would be something I'd want to watch, and that'd be something probably more along the lines of The Dark Knight, which dealt a lot with chaos and kind of the inability to control everything. And yeah. But I guess I don't really know where they're going to go with the reboot. But I mean, if Nolan's on board, I'm on board.
Yeah, and I'm glad that confirmed that he's actually going to be doing the Dark Knight 2 or the Batman 3.
Yeah, but I'm so glad he got Inception in between, though. Thank God.
Yeah, definitely. Just
he's
like
so much more than a superhero director.
Well, just like The Prestige, you know?
Right, exactly. No, I mean, I hope he just, for the rest of his life, he keeps doing that just to give us different shit to look at.
Yeah, and like we were talking about Inception, which comes out July 16th. There's actually a cool quote from DiCaprio this week.
I love this quote because it's like, oh, really?
Yeah, he said, it is Chris delving into dream psychoanalysis and at the same time making a high octane surreal film that came from his mind. He wrote the entire thing and
architecture of his mind.
Yeah, he wrote the entire thing and it all made sense to him. It didn't make sense to many of us when we were doing it. We had to do a lot of detective work to figure out what the movie was about. And I really cannot wait. It's going to be like epic. I can't wait.
Exactly.
And speaking of reboots. Now, there's been a lot of reboot news this week.
Yeah.
The most depressing one. Well, first, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Well, I mean, whatever. They're going to reboot. They don't necessarily say that in the article, but they're going to reboot it without the original, anyone, you know, director, cast.
Right.
And, I mean, many of we thought probably because, you know, it'd be too costly for them to reboot. I mean, it did.
Have different Brad reports. And the playlist was saying cheaper stars instead of Brad and Angelina, and then we kind of echoed that. And I mean, I don't really. I guess you can make that movie, but I mean, wasn't that movie dependent on a big budget movie star? That was kind of a classic Hollywood film. One of the only ones lately that was successful, you know. And I don't really get how they're gonna make that movie for less than 110 which is what they made the first one. So that's a little confusing to me. Kind of like everything is.
The most confusing was last night I was online and this story, and this of course can be, you know, it's from
hopefully it's a rumor.
It's from one source on, you know, kind of a small cinema blend, said that Universal Pictures is strongly considering a remake of the summer blockbuster Jaws.
Literally the first summer blockbuster.
Yeah, in hopes of dazzling younger audiences with new special effects. You know, and then I read the story, and I was like, all right, you know, I could see that. And then they said Tracy Morgan was involved.
Tracy Morgan was going to play the Richard Dreyfuss character, Matt Hooper,
So I said to my, you know, if they're going to go the Piranha 3D route, make it kind of the schlocky, campy.
Which might never come out.
Yeah, no.
but no, yeah, I mean, no.
Yeah, just no. Just don't do it.
Just
yeah.
No. But I mean, they make a good point, though. I mean, people forget that there were three sequels to Jaws, so it's not like...
There was even a Jaws.
I mean, it's not... I guess, in a kind of a crazy way, it's not... I mean, it's not like remaking Casablanca, you know? But, I mean, for God's sake, I feel like that's the next step. I feel like we're going to hear that there's a reboot with Casablanca coming out soon or something. I don't know.
And then the last reboot story we can talk about...
Which I think is the most appropriate out of all, aside from the Superman one. This is right on par with the Superman one.
We knew about Daredevil.
Right, this has been around for a while. Yeah. So people,
And they said that they've hired a writer, and Fox really wants to, you know, get this done. They hired David Scarpa, who did The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, which was a disaster.
Yeah, and...
no pun intended. Whoa!
And then the higher-up at News Corp, who actually just stepped down, Peter Chernin, and now he's a huge producer at Fox, and he's the one that's actually spearheading the Planet of the Apes next film.
Yeah.
And then he's behind this one.
That's one of the crappy ones.
Yeah, so they said the reason, this is funny, the reason for this reboot is Hollywood studios with Marvel superheroes need to keep reinventing the Marvel franchises so the rights don't revert back to Disney-based Marvel.
Really?
Yeah. So, because with the whole Disney-Marvel deal, I guess you have to keep making movies or else, I guess if there's a stagnant period where
Disney
you don't.
Disney just acquires and, them?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that's like Fantastic, or Mr. Four, Fantastic Four. Sorry.
Oh, the Fantastic Four.
I have Fantastic Mr. Fox in my head. Now they could reboot that. They could reboot that. And
is that why they're trying to?
Yeah. So
well, see, I wouldn't mind to see Daredevil done again because the movie wasn't great at all. But there were kind of inspired things within it. You know, I think the character of Daredevil, like the Matt Murdock character, is one of the better Marvel superheroes. He's got a Batman-like quality. The whole blind thing's kind of cool. You know. Kind of like Batman. He doesn't really have any real abilities. He's just kind of a vigilante kind of a
How
thing.
How was because I've really only seen the first 20.
And I mean, and the movie itself is dark. It tries to be very dark. I mean, there's murder in it. You know what I mean? Colin Farrell plays Bullseye. He's like ridiculous, but like he kills people. You know, like these pins and stuff. It's kind of cool. And Michael Clark Duncan plays this ridiculous kingpin named Kingpin appropriately. And anyway, so I think like if you could get someone. You know, that was during Ben Affleck's bad period, right? And he really just didn't, he wasn't up. Watching the movie, you feel like he doesn't care about the material and he wasn't really trying that hard. Kind of like all the movies he made during that, like, 2 year stint of hell. And, like, I think that if you go back and you get someone who's more talented than Mark Steven Johnson, who's the director, who really hasn't done anything worthwhile, and, I mean, that was the closest thing he's ever come to doing something well. And then, you know, I mean, even, like, you know, Ben Affleck's kind of proven himself since, but David Duchovny was rumored. That would have been a nice touch, you know, having Duchovny get his shot. You know, someone like that, maybe a more experienced, a more kind of scruffy, broken-looking actor would work a lot, you know. And watching Californication with Duchovny, I just can't help thinking he would totally fit the role. But that's what I'm excited for. But really, other than that, Superman, it's been just a clusterfuck. I mean, that's the word.
It's just like shock. Every day there's a story comes out that's like...
And it's just wow. Like, you just groan and say, God, independent film, save us.
Yeah, seriously. Like,
well, anyway.
Anyway, so moving on. That's all the news we're going to talk about. And moving on to our review from Paris with Love.
Mm.
Now, this is Pierre Morel. This guy can crank out movies like no other. He did
apparently.
He did Taken last year, and he's back.
He's
back with From Paris with Love. Now, this is based on a Luc Besson story. And whatever that means, it's just like just there's
hear,
not much.
It's just funny to hear that. Yeah. I always think.
And then this the guy that wrote it, he hasn't really done anything too noteworthy. Adi Hasek. But anyways, so the film, as many of you have probably seen the trailer, features kind of a crazy John Travolta
buddy comedy kind of thing, action thing.
Yeah, and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers plays this ambassador.
Embassy ambassador's assistant, you know, like the front, like, I guess the assistant to the American ambassador in France.
Yeah. But he's also kind of working undercover.
Oh, what? Yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, shit, bro. And, oh, my God.
And so his assignment is to meet up with this guy, Charlie Wax.
His assignment is to partner up with Charlie Wax to help him complete his mission, whatever that mission is. You don't really know in the beginning. And if he can just complete the mission with Wax, he's part of the team.
Yeah.
That's what he's
part of the club.
He's part of the club. Yeah. Part of the club. So James Reese, who has a beautiful girlfriend.
Oh my God.
And what's her name? Cassia Smolniak.
Sputniak.
My apologies. Very beautiful, very beautiful, very useless in this film. But I mean, you know.
But she had more of a part than I thought she would from the beginning.
True. No. Yeah. True. I mean, she's so perfect in the beginning that it's like almost, it's like a dream sequence with just not great acting and stale dialogue. But I mean, like, but really, And so anyway, so then he goes to the French airport, assumably Charles de Gaulle, to pick up Charlie Wax, who's John Travolta, and he's crazy.
Yeah, it takes this kind of Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 character and makes it fun.
Not horrible.
Yeah, not horrible.
Not one of the worst characters last year. No.
So it's kind of opposite.
It's literally the same character except fun, so it's interesting to see that play out. Like, actually, literally the same character, shaved head.
Yeah.
Like, I almost think that he was shooting both movies at the same time, except
that's what it looks like,
going from Paris to New York. I mean, it's not a long plane ride. Yeah, it's like you probably
and with, as this movie showed us, you can jump from place to place without any type of connection.
No narrative reasoning or anything like that. It just there's a lot of shit that just.
But it's fun. And like we talked about the last couple movies we reviewed, you know, Edge of Darkness kind of was low on that fun aspect.
Yeah, it was. Pure, I mean, it definitely loses its luster quickly.
But this movie, I mean, the action pieces are kind of they're the entertaining while you're watching it, but I didn't feel none of them really stuck with me.
I mean, it's I mean, it's like I don't know. I mean, it's not action in the way like when Bourne Ultimatum comes out, you see it. It affects you on this one level when you first see it, kind of in a similar way that From Paris with Love does. Initially, it's very kinetic, and it's like da 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 da, and it happens, and you're like, whoa, you know, kind of like this movie, really not far off. But the beauty of Ultimatum and really all the Bourne movies is really the talking about it afterwards, the just kind of the after effects, you know, how like a month later you'd be like, oh my god, I can't wait for that movie to come on DVD, just because I love the sequences and I love the layering, and I love, you know, even though they're not the deepest movies, the way they are connected is so really brilliant that it works on multiple levels, even though if you feel like it shouldn't. And this is very much a one level movie. You watch it, plot doesn't really matter, the acting is ridiculous, John Travolta doing what he does best, and then it's over, and then it's kind of like you know, like you want to get a beer, you know, it's like not really, there's not much to talk about.
I mean
it's the one of the better versions of those. I liked it almost as much as Taken, you know what I mean?
I like Taken a little bit more because
there's, I guess, a little bit more character investment, just because there was the daughter thing, and I mean that that's like, you know, it's like, you know, showing a baby, like, oh, so cute, you know, like, you know, it's like the similar kind of thing. But I mean, this never tries to do that, which I almost respected. I mean, people die in this movie so violently and so quickly. Even people that you like, even characters that you kind of are introduced to and are even like meant to like, you know, they're killed in a way that's so just, you know, devil may care. It's almost impressive. It's interesting. So.
Well, there's a couple twists towards the end, which we won't talk about yet. But there's a couple twists that kind of definitely surprised me. I didn't, you know, because the film kind of. Not meanders, but it kind of stays in, you know, action piece to action piece. But the one part that, I mean, I agree with you, Dan, that, you know, I really liked the action in it and kind of the pacing. But some of the problems, as we talked about before, the transitions, like there's a scene where there's two scenes, but right before that, they're doing surveillance outside of a window, and when they go to this prostitute's house. And it cuts from them seeing the guys almost run away to them on the street chasing them.
Right,
remember that part?
Right, and it doesn't make sense because they start driving away, and then it's almost like a Godard cut, though, because they're on the seventh floor or something of this building. And you see these guys, they're surveilling, start driving away. And then the next cut is them on the street chasing them. And the car that the bad guys are in has only moved like a couple feet.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make, you're like, what? You know, and it's kind of like that whole, you know, Godard just like bypassed the entire goal.
And then there's another
cut. But it's like not, there's no artistic, you know, rationalization.
And then when Jonathan Rhys, you know, they kind of lose him. And John Travolta looks at his phone. And then it cuts, it like zooms into his phone, zooms up into this GPS locator,
satellite,
and then it zooms back down. I need to get
myself one of those GPS satellites.
And then it's like, oh, we got him. And the next shot is them looking at that, them getting out of the car where they're at. It's kind of rushed.
Well, it also makes you wonder, then why the hell did you even chase them?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because if you could just do that, then why are we even watching this entire film? You could just literally plug in coordinates and... But I mean, like I said, I mean, the technology available in films like this is just astounding. I didn't know shit like that existed.
Yeah,
I'm amazed.
I don't know if it does, but I think
no. But yeah,
and then there's a couple of cool like action tricks that Morel does as we saw on Taken. There's a scene where
I wanted more, but
a scene where like John Travolta is kind of almost the initial meetup of them, and John Travolta is the first action thing that they arrive to, and John Travolta's going up the set of stairs, and you don't see any of these guys he kills.
Oh, that was really nice.
But you see him fall down this
like
huge...
literally. So you're with Reese, you're with James.
Spiral
Reese,
staircase,
as he's running up a spiral staircase, and he's behind Wax because Wax wants him to cover him or whatever. But as Jonathan Rhys Meyers is running up the stairs, these bodies just keep falling down the spiral staircase and just like hitting the railings and the stairs are falling all the way down. It's like almost this like strangely darkly beautiful like just moment where you know, you don't even see the action, but it's more effective than most of the action. So that was kind of a moment of inspiration there. And then Yeah, I mean, it's like any kind of lesser Luc Besson mind kind of movie, you know, like from the mind of Luc Besson movie. I mean, Taken was from the mind of Luc Besson. That's a lesser kind of a version of, you know, the better movies that he makes, that he directs, you know, like Leon the Professional, The Femme Nikita, or The Fifth Element, which kind of have more elaborate, more fully realized plots and characters. So, I mean, it always just makes me wonder. I wish that he would just spend more time on these stories and kind of develop them more, as opposed to kind of just dishing them out, you know, to guns for hire, like Piero Morell, who's I mean, definitely got a beautiful visual eye, but it does make me wonder. I mean, what is he going to bring to Dune?
Yeah,
you know, just because Taken is good. There's moments. The first District B-13, which he directed, was definitely the best of those three, of these three. But I mean, Dune is, you know, from what I know of it, I haven't read the book, but from what I've, the synopsis that I've read, and you know, the David Lynch disaster and what have you, in the miniseries. I mean, it's a very dense world,
And then they said they're completely rewriting Peter Berg's script.
Yeah, they're totally scrapping the Berg script. Yeah. Which is
interesting to see.
What I don't know. I guess now it makes me more curious, just because we didn't get anything new really with this.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. It was just like a lesser, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. But I mean, John Travolta, definitely his most engaging role since, I mean, Get Shorty, for God's sake. I don't even remember when I enjoyed him in a film, and since then, you know, that phenomenon. You know, those two kind of films.
Even,
you know,
like people, a lot of people talk about his Hairspray role, and I liked the movie, but I didn't actually.
Yeah,
like
but
him
he was
in
my
it.
Least favorite part. Yeah. So it's like, not even like, yeah, I always thought he's very forgettable in that role.
Yeah.
I remember watching the movie and thinking they should have cast a woman.
Yeah.
Just because it was almost it was just distracting.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, the movie's better than that. And then I guess a Civil Action. I would say in terms of that was an underrated film, and that was an underrated performance. But even that was like 12 years ago.
Have you seen Basic?
Ooh.
Because I haven't. I
have, and that is a disaster. Oh my God, that movie. John McTiernan, please, if you're listening, make a better film, because we're waiting.
And I don't think either of us will ever go see Wild Hogs or Old Dogs. I don't
No, I have seen parts of Wild Hogs on, you know, on HBO just when I was home. And it, you know, it is an unsung piece of trash. Let me tell you, no, it's... It's whatever.
Yeah, and as we talked about a little before, but Jonathan Rhys Meyers, he kind of plays the straight guy, and he does it well. But it's like we said, with kind of a buddy comedy.
Yeah,
it's almost nicer to have kind of a back and forth when because the whole time you're just kind of
What was that? What were we talking about? How, you know, watching the Cop Out, the Red Band Cop Out trailer, Bruce Willis, it seems, is playing the straight man, but the way that Bruce Willis plays the straight man, which is, he's got those kind of snarky jokes to go along with it. So there's a sense of humor. It's just kind of it's a reserved sense of humor. Like in The Last Boy Scout, for example, you know, he's the straight man, but he's kind of got this, you know, this snarky kind of, you know, fuck you attitude going on, which is nice. And Jonathan Rhys-Meyers doesn't have any of that. He's there.
It's pretty boring, like, especially
it's annoying, because I always feel like he's a guy, I mean, you hear of his good work in The Tudors. He was great in Match Point. You know, he's really, he's made Velvet Goldmine, which feels like a lifetime ago. He was wonderful in that, kind of playing a David Bowie composite character. But really, between those three roles, and then there's everything else, which is kind of another version of this character, like a straight man, kind of boring, like, waste of time, kind of. And it's sad, because I feel like maybe he's got more ability than that. Yeah. But
You know, unlike a lot of other films we've seen, like in this film, those are really the only two. Well, the girlfriend, but like there's
the
no one else you'll recognize.
Yeah,
it's kind of all
it's very,
just about them.
I mean, not even people you recognize,
but
just people that you'll even kind of
remember,
invest yourselves in. You know, like. But I mean, you know, the movie happens and it ends, and it's like, I don't know.
That's fun. I would say
it's
rent it.
For sex.
Yeah,
it's nice, and then it's over, and hopefully you don't get anything to remember about it, you know.
I would say, you know, check out the rent this film if you like Taken. You know what style, and if you were disappointed in Edge of Darkness,
if you were disappointed in the lack of action,
Edge
of Darkness, yeah.
And I mean, I don't feel we could talk about spoilers doing it.
Whatever. I mean, the ending is literally like, in terms of the ending's rough, because it's a lot like The Interpreter, which is a far more impressive film, but with an equally terrible ending, which is to say that. You find out that the girlfriend was undercover as working as a terrorist, and she's gonna blow up the embassy and this whole thing, and then, you know, James Reese has to find her, and then like they have that talk down at gunpoint when in real life everyone would have gotten murdered.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a lot like the interpreter at the end of the interpreter, spoilers, when Sean Penn talks down Nicole Kidman, who you find out is a terrorist, and it's like, you know, that, I mean, I guess the one good thing is with that movie, the ending is so unbelievably stupid, and the rest of the movie is so unbelievably smart that it's so annoying. It like makes you want to. It made me want to vomit when I was in the theaters. It made me actually hate the movie. But with From Paris with Love, the movie's so whatever ridiculous before then that I just kind of like bit my tongue and laughed until.
I kind of liked it. It was kind of nice.
And then also, but what's great about it is it does end up ending the way you want it to end. Yeah. When he has to blow her away, which is, I mean.
With this so overdramatic, like, do you remember all the shots?
It was like the slow motion.
There's like a,
and the bullet goes into her head, and then there's
a shot above her.
They go Spike Lee with that shit. It's like seven different cuts of the same thing. And I was like, wow. And like, all you're supposed to care about
comes
this character.
Out. Yeah, she has a bomb vest on, so John Travolta comes in at the background and catches her.
Catches the bomb. It's like, man. It's like Charlie Rat, dude, but, wax on,
but actually, speaking, since we got into spoilers and you broke open the floodgates, from Paris with Love, the part that you were talking about, we kind of hinted at earlier, but the scene there at the dinner table.
Oh, and, awesome. One of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, and this is kind of before you know that she's a bad
guy. The girlfriend's,
And she has this other friend over, who's obviously from Pakistan.
Yeah, obviously.
And obviously those are the people they're trying to chase.
Yeah.
So John Travolta, she says some type of code word or something.
Literally,
the second after she says it, he pulls out a gun and shoots her
in the head. Right in the face. And in the middle of dinner. Yeah. Awesome.
And it was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And the entire dude was like, oh shit. And like, that's the kind of movie. I mean, that's the.
I would have liked like five more moments.
Yeah,
like
a little bit more. Jolt. Mel Gibson running in, just saying, you know, you better decide whether you're hanging on the cross or banging the nails. Just more. But no, I mean, definitely, it was one of the more enjoyable, forgettable films I've seen in the last couple months. So that is a backhanded compliment.
Definitely. So check it out. Fortunately, we didn't get around
DVD. Check it out on DVD.
Yeah.
We're an obsession, people. Let's save our money.
Yeah, and Shutter Island's coming out.
save money for Shutter Island. You can see it three times.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Percy Jackson, I guess.
Yeah. And we didn't get a chance to see Dear John, but that did upset Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, no hate on Dear John. You know, Nico Sparks. Everybody needs a good cry.
Yep.
Even though you could fucking cry at the end of Avatar, but whatever.
Already, so many people have already done that. Everyone's done that already.
Cry by now.
So. And, so wrapping up, you know, we said Rent prepares with love.
Rent,
and then if Dear John fancies you.
Yeah, if you need a good cry, you know, if you just got out of a relationship, if you just got into a relationship, date night, post-date night, whatever. Yeah. And then for the next weekend, or this weekend,
Well, Dan and I are seeing Valentine's Day.
What? Tomorrow, which is Wednesday for those listening.
Yes, and some early feedback, you know, should we give it to
less
them?
Less than flattering, to say the least.
Like, for example, Eric D. Snyder, popular film critic, said, Valentine's Day has 21 characters with storylines. I did the math. It averages out to 0 laughs per character.
Oh!
And Film Score Reject said, take 27 bad movies about love, smash their heads together, and wipe away the blood. That's Valentine's Day in a nutshell.
No, positive.
So I'm interested. No, I really don't think it looks good. Dan's kind of excited for
it. I'm kind of a sucker for those kind of Love Actually. He's just not that into you composite star movies because I'm a little bitch, apparently. Yeah. But no, I mean, like, I enjoy it. He's just not into you. But in fairness, if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes for that movie, I'm pretty sure it got kind of, like, not horrible reviews. I'm pretty sure that it got a lot of people saying, hey, you know, it was a good try, you know. And I'm just saying, I think Valentine's Day is going to be kind of the logical failure of this movie, even though it has a more impressive star-studded cast.
Yeah, and then there's actually a lot of wide releases coming out. We got The Wolfman, which is was supposed to come out last year and then got pushed to this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that I saw screened last night and kind of mixed reviews. A lot of people said it was forgettable, but a fun action movie.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's going to be... I'm actually most interested to see Anthony Hopkins just because he is he's very talented in everything he does.
And then Chris Columbus's Percy Jackson.
Auteur Chris Columbus.
Yeah. He's, and Olympians, the Lightning Thief, which is kind of the first movie that he's going to try to launch,
a
series with.
Doesn't look as promising as I think they probably had hoped.
You know. I would say the premise, though, I kind of like it more than Harry Potter.
No, I mean, the premise
but
is more promising than I actually initially thought. But I'm saying financially doesn't seem to be tracking. I mean, I'm not hearing about it. Like, there's not a lot of mumble, and there's not a lot of buzz around it.
Mumblecore.
Yeah. No, it's no Hump Day.
And so that comes. All those three come out this weekend, and yeah, and then we got Shutter Island next weekend,
which will be a great day.
It'll be awesome.
Hopefully.
So yeah, so that wraps up the Film Stage podcast. Kind of short episode this week, only one review. But next week we'll be back with. I'm definitely going to see Wolfman, and definitely Valentine's Day. I might even sneak in Percy Jackson.
Whoa, double feature. Big weekend!
It'll be epic. All right, so yeah, you can follow all our news stories and any review, all our reviews and stuff on thefilmstage.com.
Of course,
and you can follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/djmecca.
And email any questions or comments or anything you would like us to talk about at editors@thefilmstage.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a good day. Close to you. Close to you.